listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe, your weekly European football podcast. My name is Rob Daly. Alongside me is Chris Parrott. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
We are talking about after Gareth Bale's bumper new contract, Cristiano Ronaldo's gone one better and is now the highest paid player in the
Ka-ching.
World. Ka-ching. Aubameyang, very eventful week, dropped for the Champions League and scored a hat-trick. No, he scored more than a hat-trick, four times at the weekend. We've got Portuguese football journalist Tom Kundert on about Porto, Benfica and André Villas-Boas, who's another earning silly coin. Rubens, as ever, trivia, Ligue 1, Serie A. And Robin van Persie almost lost an eye, so we'll be talking about that.
Yeah, we're going to come on to that. Gruesome injury. Before we get into all our European football madness, you were at Chelsea-Everton, touchline reporter for TalkSport, at one of the best team performances seen by Premier League side in recent years, if you read all the reports. I thought Chelsea were scintillating.
Oh, they were unbelievable. They were 5-0 up after 60-odd minutes. Had they wanted to go on and beat them 7-8. I'm still annoyed that teams don't, because as an Ipswich fan, we still hold the record defeat 9-0 at Manchester United. And it seems like teams just stop now when they get to 5 or 6. Just carry on, get double figures. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, Diego Costa had a couple more chances, didn't he?
He was brilliant. He just bullied and battered the defence. But he's not just that. He's a very intelligent footballer. Hazard looks again like one of the best players in the world.
What on earth was last season about?
I don't know. And Conte's so demanding. And for all of the, Guardiola way of playing football and how he's had to drill that into Manchester City and it's a work in progress, it's exactly the same. Conte is coaching them, quite obviously, to play a different form of football. It's not maybe as silky as Guardiola, but this three at the back, 3-4-3. I've always thought that a top team doing that in the Premier League well will win silverware.
Yeah, it was something you talked about last season about Conte,
because they're the only team that do it well, and that everyone's looking for that X factor or difference. Well, that in itself is. And he also knows how to play against it because he's played it all his life. He knows the weaknesses of it. Everton tried to match them. He doesn't say very much. I think his English is astonishingly good.
Yeah, I heard your interview on TalkSport and he said it's pretty good.
He knew the word pity. He said it's a pity there's an international break coming up. I think it also enables him perhaps to, if it was an English manager, he'd be getting asked about, are you title challenges? Is it important? And he can kind of just sit behind that. He's learned the language amazingly, but he can sort of basically then say what he wants.
Pellegrini used to do that,
and it helps. But he had a bit massive smile on his face because I think he came in and it was all, everyone was saying, oh, the title's definitely going to end up in Manchester. Guardiola and Mourinho won their first 5 games, was it, before the Manchester derby. Conte took a bit more time. They got thumped at Arsenal, and since then, they've been absolutely brilliant. And
tell me about him on the touch, because you were touchline, so yeah, he was interesting to watch.
He had the shiniest shoes on I've ever seen, so the lights were like sparkling off him, and he's just, the players most of the time ignore what he's saying, because he's almost calling out every pass. He'll be like, pass here, pass there, and obviously they're good enough to know that's not necessarily correct, but every time they got the ball, he was just saying, we remember him from Bolton and thinking, well, he's not that good, is he? Fits into the system perfectly. He was saying, play it into space, Paul Ashley Williams out of the back three.
Pointing almost.
Very literally pointing it, and they got a lot of their goals from it. They look seriously good, and I think you forget that for all of the three at the back, and they're very compact, they have a couple of exceptional players.
Well, it seems through at the front. I watched Liverpool yesterday against Watford and their front three was superb. And maybe Conte's found a three with Pedro in it.
Yeah.
And we talked loads about Pedro last year because we couldn't believe that Manchester United hadn't stumped up the money just to buy Pedro. And then he did end up having a torrid season at Chelsea. But this might be... What was he saying to you afterwards?
He looked so happy. Which that goes a long way in any aspect of life. You're better when you're happy. He had his kid there who was Diego Costa was his favourite player, which is funny. I asked about Costa at the end what it's like to play, and his little kid just started going, Diego Costa, Diego Costa. And it was like, yeah, you're not his favourite player, Pedro, unfortunately. But he was just, well, here's a man who won two, three Champions Leagues, Barcelona?
Two, I think.
Two, certainly. And played a major role in those. Scored at Wembley, set up the final goal against Juve. You know, this is a top player who, it didn't work out in his first season, but you sort of forgot about Pedro.
Maybe he did win three, Chris. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think he might. I don't know. I think he might have been
2011.
Part of 2009?
No, it was too early. That's annoying we don't know that.
Well, he's definitely a two-time winner, and not many players achieve that. But he fits into that system perfectly, and they have so much movement. Hazard's doing what he wants. They've got Conte and Matic. They know they can trust as the holding players. And I think they'll go very close. And along with Liverpool, they don't have European football. He was definitely an advantage. And I think Chelsea will be shocked if they didn't get top four. So you've got the answer. He's gone onto Wikipedia. How many Champions Leagues has he won?
Oh, Chris. Hold on. We've got to finish this now, haven't we?
I wonder if he played. He only probably needed to play a minute in order to get
I feel like he wasn't part of this.
This is live. Was he in the matchday squad when they beat Manchester United?
He came on in the 90th minute.
He's a three-time Champions League winner.
Excellent. Thank you very much for all your iTunes reviews as well. A Sturdy Boy called our show a great roundup. Rob Sudge says, best European football podcast around. Rizcan007 says, interesting, entertaining and intelligent too. I don't know if he's left it on the wrong.
As we desperately search through the Pedro 1, 2 or 3 Champions League.
And Guy Fraser actually left us quite a nice review, but then titled it as One for Real Football Geeks. Are you offended, Chris? You've got a new pair of glasses as well, so...
Yeah, I hate glasses. I thought you were going to bring that up. Do you know, you didn't... I thought, yeah, because you hadn't mentioned them last week, that you wouldn't have noticed.
But no, it blew my mind. It blew my mind.
Did it?
You've got a different face now.
Thanks. I can actually see
it. I'm getting used to it.
Is that what you look like? Wow.
And also thanks to ESPN presenter Alison Bender for a shout-out too on Twitter. Really appreciate that. Please do leave us a review on iTunes. Massively helps us in the charts. Chris, it is Ruben's time before we talk about Cristiano Ronaldo's new contract. This is where we bring a bit of interesting European football trivia to the table. What have you got, Chris?
Mine is about Atletico, who lost again, conceded two goals in consecutive league matches. I thought that can't have happened for a long while under Simeone. It's the first time in 55 league games that they have conceded two goals in successive games. That's how good they are at the back.
And how they've started letting them in.
Simeone, let's write off Diego Simeone's Atletico.
It is his worst start as Atletico manager. We'll come on to that very shortly. 21 points from his first 11 games. We'll talk about La Liga in a moment. We got a tweet from Jamie Garwood saying, only realised today that Chievo's club badge is a ladder. Are there any other weird badges out there? Keep up the good work on the show. Well, Chievo's away kit this year features the ladder, so I did some work on that.
You love a little badge or a kit story.
This has got me into this week's Ruben quite nicely. So the badge of Verona is a ladder. Now, Jamie, I'll work out why that is for another time. But it got me thinking about, he asked about other slightly strange badges, and Roma's comes to mind.
With the wolf.
The two kids underneath. So this is, you're going to get a story this week, Chris.
Ooh.
So this is the story of Romulus and Remus. So the basic legend of how Romulus came to be the first king of Rome begins with the god Mars impregnating a Vestal virgin named Rhea Silvia, daughter of the rightful but deposed king. After the birth of Mars's son Romulus and Remus, the twins, on the badge, the king orders them to be left to die in the river. So a basket is put in the river with the kids and they're sent off to die.
Nasty king.
But a wolf finds the kids, right? And the wolf brings them up. I think as well there was a woodpecker involved.
A woodpecker just randomly.
I've got a praised version down of it and I've not done it properly. Anyway, so they're brought up with the wolf, hence the logo with the wolf and the two kids, right? So the two kids grow up, they're later found by a shepherd, and then Romulus and Remus...
He's a shepherd, isn't it?
So when they grow up, Romulus and Remus restore the throne to Alba Longa, to its rightful ruler, their maternal grandfather. So they grew up, the shepherd worked out, and they worked out who they were, then they went back. This is what happens next. So then they set out to found their own city. Then Romulus and Remus fall out.
Yeah, after all they've been through.
After all that, and Romulus kills Remus. Unbelievable.
The wolf must be...
I don't know where the wolf is now. I think the wolf's gone.
So why is that on the badge, though?
Because Romulus, became the first king and founder of the city of Rome. Rome is named after him. And that
hence
is how
it's on the badge. So actually they have a badge of two people ended up killing each other.
No, no, no. One killed one.
Well, yeah, sorry, that would be impossible. They killed each other,
unless
wouldn't
it? Yeah. 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 Romulus killed Remus. It was a bit like Spalletti Totti last season in a way, wasn't it? Romulus and Remus. So that is why that's on the club badge.
Very interesting. Good story.
Okay.
Good story.
Enough of that. some people have sent in some Rubens of their own. La Liga Gav says, Adari scored 5 goals in a European game and joins Messi in doing so. And I was there when Messi did that against Bayer Leverkusen, which I've only talked about every week
that
for my whole life.
That's true. It's very fortunate that you went to that one game.
And Stephen Johnson's gone for this one, says that Liverpool's top European goal scorer in the current squad. Well, I checked this. One is Daniel Sturridge, but joint with Lucas Lever.
Is it?
Only 3 goals. That's the most that any Liverpool player has scored in European football.
For the club.
The likes of Mane, he's barely had a kick in Europe.
Yeah.
Good one, Stephen.
That is.
Keep them coming into us at FIE Podcast on Twitter.
I enjoyed watching, you know, Ibrahimovic scored the 25,000th Premier League goal.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed looking at the list of the other landmark goals.
Moritz Voltz is one.
Yeah, Brian Dean the first. Andy Townsend.
Moritz Voltz then had the best headline ever, which was 20,000 volts.
Yes, he did, yeah.
So good.
He absolutely nailed that.
So good. Okay, we've been asking you for your highlights of the week, and we'll get through to those as well. It was the FAI final at the weekend. Dundalk, Chris, after winning the league, couldn't quite get themselves that double.
No, they couldn't. They had to play virtually the same team as well, and this is the one, for their historic run in Europe, it is the one difficulty that then you have to come back and play against teams who desperately now want to beat you. As you know, you can imagine there's a lot of pride in Dundalk, but also if you support or play for another team, you can be like, it's knocked them off their perch. They're having it too good.
Well, this is what Rory Cassidy says on Twitter. He messaged to say, Cork scoring in the last minute of extra time to beat Dundalk in the cup final and prevent them from winning a double-double.
Yeah.
But understandable that Dundalk might not be going to extra time after that game on Thursday.
Absolutely. And in St. Petersburg and in the snow. Yeah, I mean, what a story it's been this year. And OK, they haven't won the double. They have won the league again, though. And they're doing Ireland's coefficient a world of good, which is good for them and good for everybody else. But just to quickly talk, because I was going to mention this at the end of the show, but as we're talking about Zenit now, I think we should give a round of applause to all of the fans that were at the game between Tom Tomsk and Zenit, because it was cold at the North London Derby. It was minus 13.
No, it was not.
Yes. Imagine watching football in minus 30.
Oh, my God.
You have to have a lot of vodka or an awful lot of very good coat. Probably both.
Yes, exactly. Marcello Cescu, by the way, the Zenit head coach, says Dundalk are the best side his team have faced this year.
Doesn't say much.
That's an indictment for the Russian Premier League.
Russian Premier League, exactly.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Okay, let's talk about Ronaldo. New contract, new deal to 2020. Bale's deal was a reported £150 million over 6 years. Some reports say that Ronaldo will earn £45 million a season with a new net salary of £440,000 a week, the highest in the history of our beloved game.
And you think, on top of that, his kit, boot,
museum
deals, my word.
Car watch. What else does he do?
Socks, probably.
Computer games. Isn't he on the front of Pro Evo?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly dread to think. But yeah, I mean, he's going to be 36 by the time it comes to an end, if it does come to an end, June 2021. And I just wonder whether you always thought, well, would he go to the MLS for a payday or would he go to China? You've thought, no. He's managed to stay at a top club, basically, on the type of wages that he would demand anywhere. So I think he is going to end his career at Real Madrid.
Just as Zidane says he should do. I'm happy because he must finish his career here. And Zidane, a player who didn't want to particularly decline, did he, before retiring?
Yeah. You always knew it was coming. Bale signed his new deal. You know, Ronaldo's trumped that. And the great thing is that you have the goal rush between Ronaldo and Messi, who's going to be the first to 100 European goals, which Messi's closed in rapidly on Ronaldo. But you also then think, well, you know, contract-wise, Messi can basically go to Barcelona now and say, well, CR7's, that he calls him CR7, Ronaldo's earning that much, I want the same.
OK, Real Madrid, meanwhile, beat Leganés 3-0. Frustrating day for Ronaldo, in fact. Two for Gareth Bale, Morata with the other. Atletico were beaten for only the second time this season. 2-0 at Sociedad. The Spanish newspaper AS running the headline, the worst Atleti of Simeone's era. 21 points from 11 games so far. Sevilla against Barcelona was probably the pick of the weekend fixtures in La Liga. Chris, who won this one and how?
Barcelona won, despite going 1-0 down to Vitolo. Messi and Suarez got the goals. Neymar was involved in the assist as ever. Big win that, I think, having been beaten at Manchester City. Albeit it's only a group stage game, but I think that would have hurt. It's very publicly losing to Guardiola. Important win in terms of their domestic form against Sevilla, who are definitely going to be top four. They might be top three contenders this season. They've been excellent under Jorge Sampaoli. And big win that for Barcelona. Nasri was back for Sevilla, who, well, they didn't miss him in midweek because they thumped Dinamo Zagreb. They're a good team, Sevilla, very good team. And I think that's the type of performance that Barcelona would have expected and hoped for after losing in the Champions League.
Mundo Deportivo with the headline, Rapture of Messi's now scored 500 goals for Barca. Truly outstanding. Madrid top with 27 points, Barca 25, Villarreal 22, Atleti Sevilla both on 21.
And also after the international break, it's Atletico at home to Real Madrid. And they certainly can't afford, they're 6 points behind, they certainly can't afford to lose that game. And it's also almost certainly the last La Liga Madrid derby at the Calderon because they're moving.
Oh, wow, yeah, of course.
So they're going to need that vociferous home support to get behind them because they, if they're realistic about winning the title, they might need to beat Real Madrid at home.
OK, let's talk Portuguese football now with our resident pundit Tom Condor. Oh, actually, let's do our trivia teaser here first, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Colomossi, friend of the show, an Evening Standard writer, says, another enjoyable at FIE podcast this week. The trivia question was far too easy, though. So what's the question this week, Chris?
The question is, name the four foreign managers who have won promotion to the Premier League. So they
not
can't
Irish
be from the UK
either.
They can't be Irish.
Okay. Okay, a couple of names spring to mind. We will reveal the answer at the end of the show. Bundesliga chat to come as well, but let's talk Portugal with a man who knows his stuff.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
Joining us now on Football in Europe is Portugal.net founder and Portuguese football journalist Tom Condor. Tom, thank you very much for coming on the show again.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
No, really appreciate it, mate, because lots has been happening in the world of Portuguese football. And we're going to ask you your opinion on Ronaldo and AVB going to China shortly. But let's talk about league matters. And it was the Clásico on Sunday night, 1-1 between Porto and Benfica. I switched over BT when I got home from work and saw the Benfica players celebrating at full time. Why would that be the case? Why were they so happy?
Yeah, well, it was quite amazing, really, because Porto had dominated the whole game pretty much from start to finish. They'd gone up just after half-time, gone 1-0 up through Diogo Jota, their 19-year-old forward. That looked to be enough to get them the win. They couldn't get that second goal, though. And Benfica, who, to be fair, had done very little all game, took advantage of a corner right in stoppage time and managed to grab an equaliser. So they were obviously delighted. That keeps their unbeaten run going, and it was quite a coincidence because it was a 92nd minute equaliser, and I'm not sure if you remember, but a 92nd minute stoppage goal at the Estádio do Dragão is perhaps one of the most famous goals in the whole of Portuguese football history. When 4 seasons ago there was an epic title race between Porto and Benfica, and that was precisely the minute that Porto scored their winning goal. And so, you know, a lot of Benfica fans were very keen to point that out. And kind of laid the ghost of 2012-2013.
You mentioned Jota there. There seems to be so many young talents in Portugal at the moment. Can we talk about André Silva, though? He's been getting rave reviews. How good is he and how good do you think he could be?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. There's just an incredible amount of really good top young talent in Portugal at the moment. And André Silva is definitely one of the most talented of them. He's quite unusual for a Portuguese centre-forward in that, first of all, he scores a lot of goals, which isn't, as you know, Portugal have had some fantastic players over the last couple of decades, but especially wingers and some forward players, great midfielders. But they've never really produced a top striker. arguably since Pauletta, and some people even argue that he perhaps wasn't a very top, you know, right in a kind of a, you know, the elite level. But a lot of people think that André Silva could reach that level because, again, he's a bit different to the normal Portuguese striker. He's very direct. He's just a very direct poacher, a penalty box striker, and he's really effective. It's actually his 21st birthday yesterday, but he's already probably Porto's biggest goal threat. Well, I'd say definitely Porto's biggest goal threat. He's scored, I think before yesterday, he'd scored 10 goals in his... He's scored 11 goals in his previous 10 games for club and country. He's just an absolute goal machine. He's didn't stop scoring for Porto's B team, got promoted to the first team at the end of last season, scored 2 goals in the cup final. And, you know, since then, he really hasn't looked back. He's definitely one of one to watch. And I think probably won't be in Portugal for too long.
Well, that's funnily enough, that brings us on to the next thing we wanted to ask you about, because Porto are a club that have benefited from third-party ownership, in fact, in recent years. But we've been reading about the financial problems that Porto might be having and the fact that they, as a club, might have to sell some talent. Can you give us a bit more, shed any light on that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, they really used the system of third-party ownership to great benefit, and they, you know, picked up these fantastically talented young players, especially from South America, from Brazil, developed them and then sold them for a huge profit, although a sizable percentage of that profit went to third parties, which enabled them to buy them in the first place. But of course, that's been outlawed now. And also coupled with Porto's poor run, they haven't won a trophy in the last 3 seasons. It's really led to a huge downturn in their fortunes and a huge downturn in their finances as well. They based their whole model really on that third-party ownership, and that's you know, gone out of the window. And they seem to be struggling at the moment. There was an incredible news about 10 days ago, or last week, 10 days ago, when Porto themselves released their forecast accounts for the coming year. And in those forecast accounts, there was a section which said they hope to raise 116 million euros through player sales. And the reason they were forced to do this is because they made a huge loss last year, I think 58 million euros. And they're very worried that they're going to fall foul of the financial fair play rules of UEFA. And so this is one of the ways they're hoping to, you know, to try and get back on an even keel. But of course, that will have to be an absolute record if they do that. They are very good at, as you know, at selling players, at making a good profit. The thing is, it's easy to do that when you're winning trophies and you're doing well in Europe. But, you know, Porto haven't been doing either of those two things in the last few years. So a lot of people are saying, first of all, how are they going to raise that sort of money? And secondly, if they do, you know, if they do sell maybe some of these young players, like we just mentioned, André Silva, they've got a few other talented young players. You know, how is that? What's that going to leave the team? They're going to be they're going to be in even more trouble.
What I found, Tom, recently, particularly over the past years, is that TPO has been made out to be, and I don't have any particular opinion either way, a big, bad, evil force in football, having this third party invested in the rights of a player. And obviously it's been a big news story in England over the past few months with Sam Allardyce's comments when he was caught on camera talking about how to get around TPO. Is it to Portuguese clubs, and the league is seen perhaps at times as a springboard to maybe Spain, is there a case to defend TPO? Are Porto rueful of the fact that TPO has been outlawed in this way?
Oh, Porto are for sure, because they were the biggest proponents of it. But you're right, yeah, all clubs in Portugal did use the system very much to their advantage. And a lot of people in Portugal argue that it's one way, it's one of the only ways in which, you know, a country like Portugal can compete with, you know, the big leagues and the more wealthy clubs. And so, of course, the problem with third party ownership is that you get conflicts of interest when you get the same agents and the same you know, organisations or investment funds owning sure. players at several clubs. And so, you know, I think most people, even in Portugal, probably recognise that it probably was a system which, you know, wasn't conducive to maybe fair play, you know, or was open to corruption. But in terms of the actual financial model and the ability to allow Portuguese clubs to compete on something more akin to an even playing field, with you know, there is certainly a system which I think they're going to miss.
Yeah, if we can move on to Sporting now, Jorge Jesus, they won at the weekend, but things haven't been going particularly well. We saw them losing twice to Borussia Dortmund. Is he under any sort of pressure?
Yes, I think that's fair enough. That's fair to say that. Probably for the first time since he took over just at the start of last season. Of course, Sporting, they didn't win anything last season, but they were very unlucky, really. And they got a record amount of points in their league campaign. The only reason they didn't win the league is because Benfica just had that absolutely incredible season where they just didn't stop winning, really, from about November onwards. But, you know, Sporting, they played well last season. There was definitely the feeling among the fans that progress was being made. This season started off quite well. We're top of the league after three or four games. They beat Porto early in the season. But then things started going wrong, really, for the first time since Jorge Jesus has been at Sporting. They had three successive draws in the league. Very disappointing games, as they started off the Champions League with a fantastic performance at Real Madrid. The Champions League campaign has also fallen flat, now losing twice to Borussia. And so there's no doubt about it. It's probably more than the results, which have been very disappointing over the last month or so. There's been the actual performance level. And Jorge Jesus, when he was at Benfica, almost had to rebuild the team as Benfica sold one or two or three of their best players. Exactly the same thing happened at Sporting this summer. Of course, they sold Slimani to Leicester, João Mário to Inter Milan, and they were probably two of Sporting's best players last season. And at the moment, he's struggling to rebuild.
To Cristiano Ronaldo, we've already discuss some of the figures of his new contract. What do people make of his new deal?
Yeah, slightly different kind of player, isn't he? Maybe less dynamic and more of a, I suppose, turning into a kind of conventional striker, which is exactly how he's been used at in Portugal.
Yeah,
for the Portuguese national team. And like I was just saying, before the appearance of André Silva, Portugal had always struggled in that position to have a good centre forward, and so
Nani's quite good.
Nani actually did well. It was, you know, the Euros. That's a different conversation.
It worked.
That worked fantastically. Really having
Nani and Eder.
That's right. You know, everyone's, I think, you know, he's just a source of great pride, Cristiano Ronaldo in Portugal. He's a national icon. I don't think anyone in Portugal now disputes the fact that he is the greatest Portuguese player of all time. He's overtaken Eusebio as that tag. And so, they just say, good luck to him. There was this talk occasionally of, will he kind of have a sentimental end to his career and come back to
Sporting? Ah, right, yeah.
But, fair enough to Ronaldo as well. He's always been brutally honest, to be honest, and he said, no, I'm not really interested in that, and I want to finish my career at Real Madrid, and it looks like that's what's going to happen.
I mean, it was interesting. We thought for a moment as well in the summer that there may be a sentimental return for Villas-Boas back to Porto. But that didn't happen. And now he's having had just over two seasons, actually, pretty lucrative time at Zenit. He's gone to the Chinese Super League, to Shanghai SIPG. Again, crazy money talked about. What's your view on this, Tom? You know,
there was an incredible article in the Portuguese paper, Arbola, I think it was on Saturday, when they were... they were just talking about how much money André Villas-Boas has earned since he became a first-team coach. And they said, we've done the sums and it's 71 million euros in 9 years. That's not bad, is it?
Oh,
that's
my God.
As much as you earn, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well,
it's
It's
close.
This podcast gets us close to that.
Did you say 71 million in 9 years?
That's taken until the end of his 2-year contract.
I get it. Oh, my God.
But even so, you know, it's just an absolutely incredible amount. Of course, when he was sacked by Chelsea and when he was sacked by Tottenham, he got very generous payoff, so that was all included. But, you know, it's just it's crazy money, isn't it? I suppose in Portugal, quite a few Porto fans. I mean, we've talked about Porto's woes in recent years. And, of course, the last great season they had was with André Villas-Boas at the helm when they did the treble, won the Portuguese League, Portuguese Cup and the Europa League. And so even though he left Porto in quite, I suppose we can say, unsavoury circumstances, because he kind of jumped ship straight away and went to Chelsea when, after he'd been saying all season that no, he wanted to stay at Porto. So that left a bit of a bad taste in the mouth. But because he was so successful there, and because Porto have struggled, you know, so much, that there was a, you know, kind of a groundswell of opinion, I think, even among a lot of Porto fans, that they'd like to see him return. That obviously isn't going to happen now, or at least for the foreseeable future. And, well, if he does ever return to Porto, I think he can forget about the crazy money he's been earning elsewhere.
Tom, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, as always. Really appreciate it.
Okay, no problem. Thanks a lot.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Great to get Tom on. Let's talk Bundesliga now, Chris. Mr. Walker Borkta says that the highlight of his weekend was that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang hat-trick. In fact, it was 4 goals in the end in a 5-2 win at Hamburg.
Double quick time as well. And this was after he was dropped for the Champions League game because he was out partying, or he was at a party in Milan.
Yeah, and he hadn't told the club. So ahead of the game against Sporting, it was Adrian Ramos started. And we saw pictures of Aubameyang in the stands.
Looking like some sort of 1920s.
He looked like Dick Tracy.
Inspector.
Yeah, he did. And they won without him. Ramos scored, in fact, in the game.
Yeah.
But Thomas Tuchel apparently was furious with Aubameyang, who was formerly an AC Milan player, as was his brother, Willy Aubameyang, and they were both at the party together. It didn't look debauched, but it just because he had done it without the club's permission.
I think you do have to make an example of that as well. Probably your biggest star. And I never think that, as long as, well, you have to, you don't want to upset them, and you hope they haven't got an ego then to go off the rails. But, you know, if you quite publicly slap down Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, you would think that no other Dortmund players, having seen what happens to their star, you know, just puts Thomas Tuchel in a more powerful position if he needed to be.
Well, Hans-Jerome Vaxka, the CEO of the club, said, well, at least he'd be fresh for Saturday. And he certainly was, scoring 4 times in a 5-2 win against Hamburg.
Hamburg must have been, because Hamburg, I mean, they're pretty
awful. They gifted them goals first half.
Oh, no, Aubameyang's going to now want to prove even more of a point.
Yeah, exactly. And he did. René Adler was awful in goal for Hamburg, palmed one to Aubameyang for the first. And the defeat means Hamburg are enduring the second worst start to a Bundesliga season in history.
Surely this is the year they finally go down.
Never been relegated. Played every single season in the Bundesliga. A couple of other headlines there for you, Chris. Hoffenheim stay third after a brilliant 1-1 draw at Bayern.
Yeah, Bayern pegged back then.
RB Leipzig won 3-1 at home to Mainz, and they go joint level with Bayern. And there's a couple of managerial changes to tell you about, Chris, as well. Markus Kaczynski lost his job as an Ingolstadt coach because they were in the relegation, so no surprise there. And Wolfsburg won 3-0 at Freiburg. Mario Gomez with 2. And Valerin Ismail's been given the job on a permanent basis.
Yeah, not bad that. Win one game, get the job.
Let's talk about Inter, Chris. Got to be very quick indeed. Inter Milan.
Yes.
Changing their coach. Frank de Boer sacked last show.
We talked with Richard Connolly, didn't we? Sort of preempting it was going to happen. It did. And it looks like Stefano Pioli is been the man to replace him. Marcelinho, the former Villarreal coach, Gianfranco Zola were linked. But it looks like Pioli, who was sacked by Lazio in April, is going to be the man to take over from de Boer. Rumours that Walter Samuel will be on the coaching staff, which
might help.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I mean, Richard made a very good point last week that you go there and if you don't have any, you know, Ajax, de Boer had that aura around from what he'd achieved, but at Inter he didn't. So getting someone like Walter Samuel on board as well with you, I think's a good move. Rumours that there's big splits in terms of the foreign owners and the Italian directors, though, when they were coming. It's a bit of a mess, to be honest. And that Kia Jurabchan, remember him? Carlos Tevez, Mascherano, somehow involved in...
Of course he is.
Of course he is, as some sort of consultant. I'm not a great fan of consultants, and I'm certainly not a great fan of Kia Jurabchan. But yeah, it looks like Pioli is going to replace De Boer. In terms of Serie A wins for Juve, win for Roma, Mo Salah with a hat-trick, and Milan, who won at Palermo and continued to be in the Champions League places, with Napoli only drawing against Lazio. So AC Milan on their way back, certainly.
Very interesting indeed. Richard Connolly on the show last week, Eredivisie commentator on Sky Sports, says his highlight of the weekend was go-ahead Eagles downing Feyenoord to end their unbeaten start to the league season.
Same team, go-ahead Eagles, who lost to an amateur side in the Cup.
Dear
like
Lord.
Second-tier amateur team called Jodan Boys, I think. and last year, Edwin van der Sar came out of retirement. This is how low the level is.
Oh, that was for them?
No, he saved a penalty against them. Right, so that's how small fry we're talking. And they beat Go Ahead Eagles. So maybe Jodan Boys are better than final.
Okay. Do you want to tell us, so Nice were beaten by Caen. Disappointing week for them because they lost in the Europa League as well, but they stay top.
Yeah.
Monaco with a big win.
6-0, Falcao. 4 goals in a week.
Not bad.
Great to see him back because it didn't work at United. And I think people thought that maybe it's because he, you know, these huge contracts. His injuries, his knees just were failing him.
Sure.
But it's wonderful to see him back because he's such a good player. They look very good, Monaco. I think they're going to win the group ahead of Tottenham and Leverkusen. And PSG, 4-0 winners. They're level with points of Monaco, 3 behind Nice. But Edison Cavani picked up an injury. He's going to have a scan. It's a muscle tear. They'll certainly hope that with
That's
the two-week break that he'll be okay.
Okay. Do you want to tell us about Robin van Persie's gruesome injury to finish the show?
Yeah, he an eye injury.
Yeah, tore an eyelid.
Bandaged, bleeding eye. Fortunately, he's okay. But horribly. I mean, he's a long career. I doubt he's ever had a torn eyelid before.
You saw Feyenoord. You saw Fenerbahce beat Manchester United last Thursday.
Two of the best goals I've ever commentated on. And Moussa Sow's goal was. I mean,
Rooney's was good. You include all three were
all
great.
All three, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jermaine Lent, Sunderland could do with him the way he's playing for Dick Advocaat. Very difficult start, but Fenerbahce are winning consistently now, and I think Advocaat has turned them around impressively. But that Moussa Sow goal, I'm still thinking about it now.
Okay. Chris, we're going to be away for the international break, but do you want to give us the answer to the trivia teaser to finish the show? It was which four foreign managers, non-UK or Ireland, have got teams promoted to the Premier League?
There is a Fulham link here because, Aitor Karanka last year at Middlesbrough. Jokanović with Fulham.
Sure, yeah.
No, with Watford.
With Watford,
he's
yeah.
He's now at Fulham. Roberto Di Matteo at West Brom.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And Mr. Toothpick himself. One of the greatest players of the 80s, Jean Tigana, with Fulham.
Wow. I would not have got Jean Tigana.
Exactly.
Well done if you got that at home as well.
Congratulations.
We're away for the international break, Chris.
We are.
But please do leave us a review on iTunes and tweet us at FIE Podcast.
And don't miss the FIFA derby, Qatar against Russia.
We'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
This is Football in Europe.